As a society, we've become much better at talking about family violence and reporting incidents to police. But just how good are we at compensating survivors? And how useful are the courts as an avenue for seeking redress? A recent out-of-court settlement has seen a plaintiff awarded $100,000 following a civil case in New South Wales. The case involved allegations of assault and battery. Professor Barbara McDonald teaches at the University of Sydney Law School.
A tort is what we call a civil wrong as opposed to a criminal wrong. It's a wrong that one person does to another person. Assault is actually threatening a person with violence. Battery is the actual touching of some sort in a way which is unlawful or not consented to. And then the other important tort is false imprisonment, where somebody unlawfully imprisons another person.
There was a recent civil case. The plaintiff brought about an action against an ex-partner for assault and battery. So this settled out of court, which means there's no admission of wrongdoing, but it settled out of court for the sum of $100,000. What strikes you about this settlement?
Well, because it's settled out of court, we don't have the actual details. If a person sues for assault and battery, they're entitled to various types of damages. The first issue you'd always ask is whether or not the person suffered actual physical injury of some sort, requiring medical care, perhaps leading to a loss of earnings, putting them out of the workforce for some time, possibly even some permanent disability or problem, and so on. So clearly, if there's financial losses like that, then that can be quite a substantial part of the damages. But in an assault and battery, where this has been done intentionally by another person, the plaintiff, the claimant, is entitled to damages simply because the assault or the battery occurred. These are very ancient torts which have been recognised since the 13th century, and they sit side by side with the criminal law of assault and battery. But a person can bring an action themselves and recover damages simply because they were assaulted or they were battered.
And is this common? Have you heard of many cases like this involving figures like this?
There is no doubt that, as we know, there is a shocking amount of domestic violence which would routinely involve assaults, threats, and battery. But it's relatively unusual for them to come before the courts. One case that's been mentioned before was a case back in around about 2000 called Ainsworth, where district court judge, actually Judge Morrell, who's now the Chief Justice of the ACT Supreme Court, Judge Morrell awarded somewhere in the vicinity of $500,000 to a woman who sued her former, I'm not sure if it was husband or partner.
It was a former husband, yes.
Husband, yes, for numerous assaults. And I'm using the term assault broadly there to include touching and battery as well, one of which at least led to her developing a deep vein thrombosis in her arm. Also, of course, she had very significant post-traumatic stress disorder, and that led to a loss of earning capacity. So a lot of that amount was for medical problems, but also the impact on her of the loss of earning capacity. And there was an appeal against that decision to the New South Wales Court of Appeal in 2002, and that appeal was dismissed with the New South Wales Court of Appeal upholding Judge Morrell's assessment of damages. They thought that she had taken into account all the proper considerations, that it was accepted that she continued to have trauma and an impact on her earning capacity because of the attacks by her husband. So I think that just explains the very large amount there.
And that's probably the high watermark that we know of in relation to these types of cases.
Yes.
There was another case in 2010 involving two doctors. Can you tell me about this case?
Yes, that was
Morrison.
Yes, Morrison Karu Naratne. That was a case, again, where there had been a number of different assaults over a period of time. Now, the judge didn't believe everything that the claimant claimed, but did accept that there had been a number of occasions on which the claimant had been the victim of direct and intentional harm. And in the end, I think the court did accept that there were some significant assaults in this case and damages awarded.
I think the damages in this case awarded to $200,000. So that indicates the serious nature of the assault?
Yes, I think so. Yes, absolutely. I note there was another one too in the New South Wales Court of Appeal called Cooper and Mulcahy, involving post-traumatic stress disorder. In that case, there had been a threat to kill the woman, for which an award of $50,000 had been given. There was another case, a threat to shoot. Aggravated damages of $100,000 were awarded, but the plaintiff in that case had considerable difficulty with some of the claims because they were out of time. Therefore, the limitation period had expired, so she wasn't able to recover everything.
So we have a number of cases that are on the record. What does this tell us about how often the civil courts are being used as an avenue for redress for survivors of family violence?
I think they're used occasionally. The defendant may not have any assets or ability to pay any damages that are awarded, and the family finances might already be stretched simply because of the general circumstances. I suppose if there are children involved, then suing the other partner may undermine the sort of calmness for the family and the children's well-being. The plaintiff, of course, has to find someone to bring the action, has to finance it. And even though you may well get lawyers doing it on a no-win, no-fee basis, nevertheless, you've got the risk that there may not be enough evidence and the person may not be believed, and then you'll have to pay the other side's costs. So I would think it's really more the fact of the trauma of having to bring proceedings, all the angst that goes with bringing proceedings, going to court, reliving what happens by giving evidence, being cross-examined. I mean, these things are dreadful when the allegations are true, and they're dreadful when the allegations are untrue for both parties. So the stress on all sides, but it's adding to the angst for the victim of domestic violence. And if in the end the defendant actually doesn't have the means to pay out the damages anyway, then you might question whether it's worth going through it. But on the other hand, sometimes people are quite prominent or they might have assets, and so their former spouse or their former partner is prepared to bring the action.
In talking about some of the civil cases where survivors have sought compensation for damages, is part of the problem being able to prove economic loss? Can that be a bit of a barrier for many survivors of family violence?
Yes, there's quite a heavy burden of proof because you are alleging very, very serious wrongdoing by the other person. And there's a general principle of law that the more serious the allegation, then the stronger the proof must be. It is only on the balance of probabilities. It's not the criminal standard of beyond reasonable doubt. It's only the balance of probabilities. But nevertheless, if very nasty deeds are being alleged, then the court does require quite a strong amount of proof. But that's only as to whether or not the event occurred at all. The other issue you mentioned is proving economic loss that resulted. And the claimant has to be able to prove that their economic loss was caused by the assault and battery rather than by something else.
For some survivors who are trying to seek some kind of redress, can the civil jurisdiction perhaps provide redress or acknowledgement of a wrongdoing that perhaps the criminal courts may not be able to provide?
Certainly. It allows people to take action themselves. They don't have to wait for the police to take action. And as long as it's not a trivial matter, the court will take it seriously. The judgment, I think, serves as an element of justice for them, a recognition that they have been wronged. It serves as a deterrent to other people. It does allow people to take action themselves.
Professor Barbara McDonald from Sydney University's Law School. So what other avenues are there, legal or otherwise? Liz Snell is the Law Reform and Policy Coordinator at the Women's Legal Service in New South Wales. She has concerns about the operation of the current New South Wales Victim Support Scheme, especially in comparison to other states. But she says the criminal courts can in fact make rulings to compensate survivors of family violence.
A court that convicts a person of an offence may direct the offender to pay a sum of up to $50,000 to a victim survivor of that offence as compensation for injury suffered. However, to my knowledge, I don't know if that direction's ever been made.
And so this would apply to a range of offences. Why hasn't it been applied in many cases? Who would need to ask for this? Is this the matter of the prosecuting team, the police saying, by the way, we want to seek compensation for the victim here?
The direction can be given by a court on its own motion or on application by the victim survivor. So if the director of public prosecution was involved, then that would need to be perhaps been asked for in part of the proceedings. I think part of the issue is that the perpetrator may not necessarily have that amount of money to be able to pay. Criminal matters may also be fast moving, so it's important that there are a range of avenues to be able to pursue support, and probably the most accessible avenue is in New South Wales is the Victim Support Scheme. If I can just say that back in 2013 was called Victims Compensation, and under that scheme, what victim survivors of domestic violence were eligible for between $30,000 to $50,000, where they had experienced severe and disabling psychological injury. And under this new victim support scheme, which was introduced in May 2013, victim survivors of domestic violence are eligible for a $1,500 recognition payment, or some may be eligible for a $5,000 recognition payment if they can establish that they've experienced grievous bodily harm. So there's a huge difference between the support that once was offered under the Victims Compensation Scheme in New South Wales and the support that's now offered under the New South Wales Victims Support Scheme.
So that's quite a drop in the amount of money that is available to survivors. And what are some of the things that a person who's been through family violence has to go through in order to apply for this compensation?
Another one of the issues with the current scheme is that there are really significant documentary evidence requirements, so it's actually quite difficult to access the scheme. So a person who wants to access financial support or a recognition payment would need to, well, first of all, they have to have reported to police or report to a government agency. And in addition to this, they also need to provide medical evidence. There are significant barriers to people who've experienced such violence, like domestic violence, in reporting to police. So, for example, our First Nations people, there's a distrust of police, and also migrant and refugee communities may also be reluctant to be engaging with police or government agencies. And we are, in fact, the only jurisdiction, the only state or territory in Australia that has upper time limits to access victim support. These upper time limits, generally speaking, it's a 2-year from the act of violence where you can access recognition payment or financial assistance. In the case of domestic and family violence or sexual assault or child abuse, it's up to 10 years to access a recognition payment. But even 10 years, it's arbitrary, it's not best practice, as evident by the fact that every other state and territory has discretion, so people can apply out of time.
And Liz Snell, I'm wondering, we've been talking about survivors of family violence, and many survivors go to services such as the Women's Legal Service or community legal centres to get assistance. Do you have any stories that can illustrate to us the important role that compensation can play?
I think the most powerful thing I can say is that when a victim survivor of domestic violence receives back a determination in their victim support matter, which indicates that they've been heard and they've been believed, that's incredibly powerful. Victim survivors often say to us, it's not about the money, but I do want someone to hear what I have to say. And whilst it's not necessarily about the money, money certainly is important in terms of helping people in their recovery. And there are other aspects of the scheme that are also important in recovery process. So counselling is provided with relocation costs or security upgrades. However, those supports are only available within the first 2 years of an act of violence, or if the person was a child at the time, within the 2 years of turning 18. And we've been able to see, particularly under the old scheme where people were eligible for up to $50,000, that money makes a significant difference in helping those who've experienced chronic domestic violence recover. For example, one woman was able to buy a car, which was incredibly important because there was no way to access transport around her area. And as a consequence of the severe domestic violence, she hadn't been able to leave the home and you know, engage with community.
So how does the compensation that's available in New South Wales differ to other states?
So in Queensland and Western Australia, their schemes enable up to $75,000. In South Australia, it's up to $100,000. In cases of terrorism that happen overseas, Australian victim survivors of that are eligible for up to $75,000. So we would kind of question, in terms of domestic terrorism in the form of domestic violence, such victim survivors are lucky to be able to get one-tenth of that payment. So we kind of question, what are we saying about the value and recognition in terms of the pain and suffering victim survivors of domestic violence? And also, other significant redress scheme is the Child Sexual Abuse Redress Scheme, where victim survivors of child sexual abuse are going to be eligible for up to $150,000.
Liz Snell from the Women's Legal Service in New South Wales. We spoke with her via Skype. The New South Wales Victim Support Scheme Liz mentioned has in fact been under review since 2016. A spokesperson for the New South Wales Department of Justice told the Law Report that that review of the Schemes Act will be tabled by mid-2018. On RN, Radio Australia, News Radio, and on your smart device, this is the Law Report. I'm Erica Vowles.